Okay, welcome to Shiur number 2 in our Monday night series. Just took us a couple of weeks to get here. Hopefully we'll be more consistent. I can't really help when people schedule weddings. That's the way it is. But other than that, we'll hopefully be consistent. We started last time on the topic of davening versus medical care, where the medical care is not pikuach nefesh, right? We began by saying, if it's a matter of saving somebody's life, you know, there are no questions to ask. You just go ahead and do, and that's that. But the question that we do ask is, what if it's not pikuach nefesh? It's simply, generally, you know, taking care of somebody's health. How do you rank things? How do you deal with this issue? I should note that at this point we have quite a few people online. If you're able to make it here in person, you know, it's very comfortable here in the here in the lobby, and you are more than welcome to join us. Okay, not you, Harry. I know you're in New Jersey. So, what we did last time, since it's been a couple of weeks, is we framed the discussion of Osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah, that somebody who's involved in a mitzvah is exempt from other mitzvos. We saw the Gemara in Bava Kama about somebody who's taking care of a lost object and is therefore potentially exempt from giving tzedakah and is even considered a paid guardian. They're being paid in the sense that they are exempt from having to give tzedakah. We also saw the Gemara in Sukkah about people who are engaged in pursuing a mitzvah, shluchei mitzvah, are patur from Sukkah, exempt from sitting in the Sukkah. We had the example of the tefillin merchant as well, which was broader. It wasn't just about Sukkah now, but it's broader. It's about all mitzvos, it appears. We noted that this exempts the person from fulfilling another mitzvah, but it does not permit violating a prohibition. They would not be allowed to say, I'm engaged in a mitzvah, therefore I can eat treif. That doesn't happen. That was one key note. Another note, which I didn't really make last time, I think I actually skipped the source in the interest of time, but I had a Yerushalmi on the source sheet where we distinguished between exemption from a biblical mitzvah and exemption from a rabbinic mitzvah. Did we actually end up discussing that? I don't think we did. I think I skipped it. But the Yerushalmi offers a distinction between being exempt from Shema and being exempt from Shmona Esrei. Because Shema is a biblical mitzvah, Shmona Esrei is a rabbinic mitzvah. Even though there may be a biblical mitzvah of davening, the Ramban says there is a biblical mitzvah of davening, nonetheless, it isn't the wording of Shmona Esrei that we have. Somebody the other day sent me a clip of Rav Asher Weiss in a shir, who was commenting that thank you Hashem is a fulfillment of a biblical mitzvah. That's it. You fulfilled your biblical mitzvah of davening. You don't need Shmona Esrei for that. It is a derabanan and it's important. So don't skip it and say, well, I'm just going to say thank you Hashem. That's not a good idea. But it's an important point to recognize that the threshold is higher when you're talking about exemption from biblical mitzvos. What if you're able to do both mitzvos and it just requires a little work, right? That was something that we discussed in some detail and we said it's a machlokas, right? The view of Tosfos is if you're able to do both, you are obligated to do both. That's the position of Tosfos. Whereas the Ran, Rabbeinu Nisim, says it depends. If it would require great effort, then you're exempt. Even though you could theoretically hit both, if you don't need, if it would be difficult, then you don't have to push for that. The Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo, in the Shulchan Aruch, sided with the view of Tosfos and said that if you can do both, you have to do both. The Rama sided with the view of the Ran and said not if strain is involved, and the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan follow the view of the Rama and follow the view of the Ran, which is to say, if you would have to strain in order to do both, then you don't have any such requirement. This is all clear? I don't expect people to remember it from last time, because it's been a long time, but at least it should be clear now. The last point that we discussed was, what if you're being paid to do mitzvah X? Are you still exempt from mitzvah Y? maybe we should view payment as something that makes it less of a mitzvah, so to speak, even though it is still a mitzvah, and even though you get reward for mitzvahs that you do, even if you're paid to do them. Nonetheless, it's really, it could be looked at as a lesser form of the mitzvah, and therefore it should not exempt you from the other. So we pointed out that the Gemara in Sukkah talked about tefillin merchants, people who are selling tefillin. And it said there, I'm just going to put the link in the chat again for the source sheet for those who just joined. We said there that the people who are selling tefillin are exempt from davening, even though they're paid. So does that show that being paid does not change the calculation? But we said, not necessarily, because Rashi on that Gemara in Sukkah said that we're talking about tefillin merchants who are working to make tefillin available for people who need it. That's actually on the source sheet here, come to think of it. If you take a look at source Beis, right? Source Aleph is the Gemara in Nedarim that talks about someone who's returning a lost object. I'm not going to go into that Gemara right now. I did bring it on the source sheet, but I'm not sure why. But if you take a look at source Beis, Rashi says, regarding the tefillin merchants, halokhin mehen, they buy the tefillin off of the manufacturers of the tefillin, the sofrim, kedei limkor ulaham tzian litzarech lahem, to sell them and make them available for those who need them. That's Rashi's comment, which you can read as, this is a person who, from the kindness of their heart, is trying to make tefillin available. Granted, they charge because they incur a cost. But they're really doing it lishma. That was the possibility. And therefore, in the event that someone is just doing something as a job, maybe we won't say, Osek v'mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah. Clear? So, yes.
People that are busy for the kahal.
Yeah. So we're going to get to that. That will be a discussion. The question of somebody who's involved in what we're going to call tzarchei tzibur, right? The needs of the community, will they also have an exemption? So that actually is something that we're going to be talking about. So the Magen Avraham offers an approach. The Magen Avraham, Rabbi Avraham Gambiner, 17th century Poland, one of the principal commentators to the Shulchan Aruch's Orach Chaim Chelek that deals with, among other things, laws of davening and Shabbos. Take a look at source Gimel. The Magen Avraham writes, Mashma, it's indicated from the Gemara in Sukkah that talked about the tefillin merchant, Dim osa kidei lehistaker bo, that if somebody is doing this in order to make money, lo mikri osek b'mitzvah, they're not called osek b'mitzvah. That's what it sounds like at first. And then he goes into the Gemara in Nedarim, the one that I just said I wasn't going to get into. Let's see how much we have to in order to explain it. Vitzarech Ion, he says, this requires examination. B'Nedarim daf lamegimel mashma demachzir aveda havi osek b'mitzvah aval bishenotel alav sachar. That's easy. He says, the Gemara in Nedarim says that somebody who is returning a lost object is called somebody who is engaged in fulfilling a mitzvah. To extend that, he is exempt from other mitzvos, even though he is getting paid with his tzedakah exemption. Clear? So V'yesh Lomar, he says, you could answer. Dehasam eino notel ela schar batalaso. His first answer is, that's not really getting paid. That's just getting paid for the time lost from other pursuits. In other words, you are, by engaging and taking care of this lost item, taking time away from your other pursuits. So you're being paid for your time by the fact that you're exempt from giving tzedakah, but that's not salary. So maybe you can't deduce from that to cases where somebody's actually earning money, you know, making a living with this mitzvah. Inami, alternatively, hasam ikar kavanaso lahashiv aveda. This is the important line. He says there, in the case of the person restoring the lost object, his main goal is to restore lost property. Right? It's not that he finds it interesting and fun to take care of chickens. He's taking care of the chicken because, you know, Ray lost his chicken and he needs it back. And therefore, the guy says, I am going to help him. I'm gonna make him whole. I'm taking care of this chicken until I can get it back to him. Aval hacha ikar kavanaso lehistaker. Whereas with the tefillin merchant, he says, the guy is making his money off of this. This is how he's making his living. So the Magen Avraham says, it depends on your intent. You may be making money, but that doesn't define this as a money-making pursuit. It's really a chesed. It happens to be there's some profit involved.
The not-for-profit is making money.
Yeah, he's taking a salary insofar as it involves furthering the nonprofit. The Magen Avraham says it's what is your main goal? So if your main goal is I would like to be able to make money, then you're not exempt from other mitzvahs. If your main goal is do the mitzvah, then you're going to be exempt. So I guess in the tefillin case, he's going to have to argue then also. Your main goal is actually not the goal of making money. Your main goal is going to be pursuit of the mitzvah. Well, what do you do if the person equally intends both? They legit intend both, but they have both intentions. So the Bir Halacha, I didn't bring it on the sheet. I thought I did, actually, but it's not here. The Bir Halacha is commentary to Or HaChaim. It's written either by the Mishneh Berurah, by the Chafetz Chaim or his son-in-law. Both of them are credited with doing parts of it. So the Bir Halacha says, if they equally intend both, we view it as intending the mitzvah. It's like somebody who blows shofar and blows shofar for the sake of the mitzvah, but also intending to learn how to do the mitzvah. Like they're practicing blowing shofar, but their intention is to do it for the mitzvah, and the halacha is that counts for the mitzvah. Automatically, the mitzvah intention is considered primary. So the Bir Halacha says that's true here as well, and he says that's definitely true when you think of a sofer as an example. You have somebody who's writing a Sefer Torah. So he's going to get paid to write the Sefer Torah. Do we then say that the Sefer Torah is pasul because he wrote it without kavanah for the mitzvah? Clearly not. So the answer is your intention for the mitzvah is considered automatically the primary intention, and that's how we would view it. Clear? Good. Okay. So now let's see. With all of that as background, let's see the Nishmas Avraham. This time, I wised up. I've got the PDF numbers on the page number on the sheet, so it should work. It won't work for you because you've got a first edition. For those with a first edition, I wish you luck. I'm not sitting there working that through because the first edition is such a nightmare to work with. As it is, I have to thumb through my third edition here in order to find it. But it's Or HaChaim Lamed Ches, and it's Sif Katan Vav. So this is, you don't have it? It should have the letter Vav and the word Vitagarehen. Okay, good. It's 59. No. Why in the world would that be?
Is it this?
That is it. That's page 60. Oh, you know why? Yeah, no. It's all good. I'll tell you why. Because you don't need the first part of it. What I really wanted was the part with the bold word Rofim.
Oh, okay.
That's why. Yeah. Everything before the word Rofim is still Torah, but it's all the things that we just spelled out. It's all the things that we just spelled out. The word Rofim should be in there. Can you turn the page so I can see it? Yeah, the bottom.
Oh, Rofe?
Oh, that's funny. Rofe. Yeah. No, he changed the heading in the third edition. That's why. Okay, so for those who are doing this online, you should be looking at page 60. Of the PDF, and the word should be Rofe in bold. In mine, it's Rofim. Yours, it's Rofe, but don't worry about it. Okay. So after he brings the background regarding this whole issue and intent, and you intended two different things, and so on, he then says, Ulefize, based on this, Kosev HaRav Yitzchak Zilberstein Shlite, quote of Yitzchak Zilberstein. Yitzchak Zilberstein is a major posek. He deals a lot with medical halacha issues. He has a multi-volume set called Shiurei Torah Lerofin, in which he deals with contemporary medical issues. His father-in-law was Rav Elyashiv, and on many, many issues, he always says, I asked my father-in-law, and this is what my father-in-law had to say. He's an extremely creative thinker. He likes to come up with cases, and you look at them and say, no one ever asked him this. This is totally, he just made this up. Like, no one ever asked this question, but they're great. So he says the following here. Rofe o achot, doctor or nurse, af al pisha kol avodaso hu rak avur sachar, even though all of his work is for pay, gam rofe kazeh hu meshiv aveda, a doctor like this is also like somebody who is restoring lost property, right? Healing somebody is compared with restoring property that's actually brought in halacha. He says there's nothing greater in terms of restoring property than what the doctor is doing. Since when he's actually working, like the sofer who's writing the Torah, when he's actually working, he's not thinking at all about how much he's getting paid. Right? If that's not true, don't disabuse me of my naivete. Thanks. So if that's true, ela osek bistam l'shem ripoy hachole, but rather his intent is the healing of the patient, v'tipulo, and his care, parentheses, I have in parentheses, v'hu adin achot, the same thing is true with the nurse, it's not only a doctor, hu etzem ha-mitzvah, that is the mitzvah, the care that is being given by the medical professional is the mitzvah, yesh lo din ka osek b'mitzvah, they have the status of somebody involved in a mitzvah, and therefore they are indeed exempt from other mitzvahs. That's what Zilberstein. Yeah, Michael.
So my concern, if his assumption is wrong,
mm-hmm.
God forbid, there's a doctor who's thinking of money while he's working.
And
that's his primary on his mind, Chas v'Shalom. Does his conclusion still apply?
So, since we said that where you have both intentions, the question that was asked was, what if you had a doctor, not that we know anyone like that, but what if you had a doctor whose mind was actually on getting paid when they were doing the work? Would that change the verdict? So, I can't speak for Zilberstein, but we've already noted the idea that where it's a 50-50, that's considered to be his intent is on the medicine, not his intent is on the salary. So, that's the answer I would give you right now. But let's keep on reading. Ach, Kasav Lihagon or Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal, or Shlomo Zalman wrote to me, Im Zenachutz Achshav, if the treatment is needed right now, Vadai Oster Lahavsik Es Hatipul, you are definitely not allowed to interrupt the care. In other words, we're saying you're exempt from the other mitzvah. He says, no, you're not allowed to interrupt the medical care. Vigam Efshur Shalo Yatza Yidei Mitzvah. Not only that, if you did interrupt it to do the mitzvah, you may not be Yotzei the mitzvah. Why? Kevin Shezeb Ba'avera, because it's a mitzvah haba ba'avera, right? It's a mitzvah that you achieved by doing something wrong. You weren't supposed to stop taking care of the patient. So he says, Lafiyani is daiti b'shashu pater mea mitzvah. In my humble opinion, at the time he's exempt from the mitzvah, then it's an avera for him to do that. Aval imzel lo nachutz, but if it's not immediate, he doesn't have to do the care right now. It can wait. He can say Shema, ulhaniach tefillin, put on tefillin, v'lachzor letipul, and then go back to taking care of the patient. Choshvani dechayav im ein bazet torah. Then I think you're obligated to do that, assuming there isn't great strain, right? Like the Ron that we talked about. Ad kan lashono, end of quote. And then he says, see what I'm going to write later on in Siman Sadi Gimel. But that's where we are. That's where we are right now. So the statement that he makes is that the doctor is exempt from davening. And again, this is not a life and death case. This is general restoration of health. And he says the doctor is exempt from davening at this point.
Exempt means to make tashlumim, the next davening?
That's going to be coming up as our next topic. If you see on the source sheet where I wrote, Ma korei acharei tefillah, it actually is a mistake. It should have said acharei tipul. That's my mistake. What happens after he's done taking care of the patient? What's the obligation? Does he go back to where he was and all that? That's where we're going. Okay. One note on this, and this is something that I'm going to say based on the Nishmas Avram. I'm not going to go through a lot of sources. I'm only going to go through one source in order to get there. It's an interesting question. There is no obligation to become a doctor. I'm not talking now about kibbutz avim if your parents really wanted you to become a doctor. That's a separate thing. But there is no obligation to become a doctor. There is an obligation that if you know how to take care of people, if you know medicine and somebody needs medical care, then you have an obligation to provide medical care. That's true. However, there is no duty of gain medical expertise so that you will be able to. This was actually the first year of the Kollel in Toronto. We had a launch event in which we had each of the members of the Kollel give shiurim, and we did like three rounds of round robin shiurim, and then Rav Herschel Schachter gave a shiur for the community. So my topic for mine was, is there an obligation to learn medicine? I mean, my topic was the obligation to provide medical care, but part of that was, is there an obligation to learn medicine? And I had the chance to ask Rav Schachter before my shiur, and he said, no, there's no obligation to. And then I gave my shiur, and he was there. And I had certain sources that I thought maybe argued that there would be an obligation, but clearly there's no obligation. And there's more to say about that. But take a look at this Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in Source Hay, where he speaks pretty definitively. He says, Lehis lamed larapos ein chiyuv al ha'adam. He says, there is no obligation for somebody to learn to heal. He says, we don't find that there's an obligation for a person to learn the science of healing in order to heal patients who are out there, or that will be there in the future. Even though there are people around who are sick, and we are concerned for them. Why? Because a person's duty is to save others with the means that one has. If he's already a doctor, then he has the duty to save people who are sick. In the event that somebody has the ability to swim, then he has to go save somebody who's drowning in a river. But a person does not have an obligation to learn to swim and how to heal the sick, such that in the event that he has the opportunity then to save somebody, to heal somebody, he should be able to do that. Now, in truth, with just those two cases that we gave, right? The question of, do you have an obligation to learn medicine in order to heal? Do you have an obligation to learn to swim in order to save somebody? The truth is, like, I might have, you know, just without sources, without going into it from Torah perspective, I might have said, well, why not? You know, it's very common that people are sick. Maybe I should have to learn basic CPR. Maybe I should have to, you know, be able to deal with circumstances that arise. Why don't I have a duty to that? But then he gives you an example, and you say, oh, yeah, I guess that's true, by his third case. V'damizeh, he says, this is comparable. Ein chiyuv al ha'adam la'avod ul'harviach harbei k'safim k'dei sh'yuchal l'kayim mitzvah tzedakah l'atzil nefashos bahen. We don't say that you're obligated to make more money in order to be able to give more tzedakah and to save people with money. No one says that you have a duty to make more money in order to give more tzedakah. The obligation a person has is as they are. To do whatever you have the ability to do. Clear? Right? Once he says that, you're like, oh, that makes sense. Even though I know people who, davka, you know, they could retire, but they still work because they have, you know, people they can help with this money, so they want to have that that opportunity. So I bring that as background for a discussion which we're going to do from the Nishmas Avram, as opposed to bringing all of the background sources, because he does a very nice job of bringing them, and I didn't think it would be added by us seeing the sources outside in this case. So it's page 133 of the PDF. Or Chaim Tzadi Gimel. If you see where he starts with De'eno Tzarich, actually not De'eno Tzarich, V'ra'isi. It's Aleph. It's the second paragraph in Aleph. V'ra'isi. Everyone online see it? No one's saying they don't see it. Okay. So Veraisi benesivos. He quotes you the nesivos. The nesivos, Rabbi Yaakov Lorberbaum of Lisa. He was, I believe, 19th century. So I saw in the nesivos. Shekosev legabe gabay tzedakah. He writes the following regarding a tzedakah collector. Gabay tzedakah does not mean the person who walks around with a pushka during Chazaras Hashatz. The gabay tzedakah means a person who has a communal responsibility of going to people and saying, this is the amount you ought to be giving for the sake of the community, and then getting them to actually give it, kind of like UJA-ish, right? Not like the guy in Shul. This is what we want you to. I don't know what that's like here. I'm speaking of what I'm familiar with. So he says, "Da'afilu leman desvira le mishum pruta de Rabbi Yosef." Even within the view that the person who is restoring a lost object is exempt from tzedakah, nira de begabay tzedakah lo shayach zeh. That's not relevant for the gabay tzedakah. Why? Delo shayach pruta de Rabbi Yosef rak b'makom sha'osek b'mitzvas asei umutal alav b'chiyuv v'asur lekabel alav sachar. He says, the exemption from giving tzedakah is if you have an obligation to do the mitzvah that you're doing, such that you wouldn't be allowed to say, well, give me money and then I'll do the mitzvah. If I encounter somebody's lost object, I have an obligation to get it. I have an obligation to take care of it. I have an obligation to return it to the person. That's my obligation. He says, kigon bahalva, o bahashavas aveda, like in extending a loan. Somebody comes to you and says, can you help me out? You have the means, you have an obligation to help them out. Restoring lost property, same thing. Aval tzedakah, hachiyuv mutal al kol adam litein tzedakah. But when it comes to tzedakah, everybody's obligated to give tzedakah. Aval ein chiyuv u'mitzvas asei mutal al shum adam lios gabay tzedakah. But no one has an obligation to be a tzedakah collector. It's a great mitzvah. If you can be somebody who is going to solicit people for tzedakah, the Gemara in Bava Basra says, Gadol hama'ase yosem in ha'ose. Right? It's greater to be somebody who gets others to give than to be the one who actually gives personally. If you can be that person who's going to collect from the community, you're doing an amazing mitzvah. But it's not your obligation. That's not a requirement. Dimhaya mitzvah sasei lios gabai, because he says, if there was an active mitzvah of commandment of be a collector, how you call Yisrael Mechuyavim Lios Gaboyim, then everybody would be obligated to become Gaboy Tzedakah. That's nonsense. Rak hachiyuv al habezdin lachof as Yisrael al hatzedakah. The obligation is on the bezdin as the communal authority to get Jews to give tzedakah. Ulemitzvasan shalmakom the ulahamid mamunim alzeh. They have this responsibility to take care of things and delegate the job and so on. But mamunim rashon lekabel sachar al zeh. And the people they designate to collect tzedakah can be paid to do it. They can be paid to be tzedakah collectors. Lo shayach bazeh pruta de Rabbi Yosef. So therefore the exemption doesn't apply. It's not called osek b'mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah. It is called osek b'mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah if you're doing a mitzvah you're obligated to do. Not if you're doing a mitzvah that you're not obligated in. That's Rabbi Yaakov Lorberbaum's point. Clear? So now you start to see where the question comes in. Because there's no mitzvah of becoming a doctor. I don't have a chiyuv to be a doctor. So where is this going to take us? So he quotes the Stei Chemed. The Stei Chemed was a brilliant, brilliant author of an encyclopedia of halacha. It isn't always halacha. It's multi-volume. And it's an incredible read. It's really very enjoyable. He was in Turkey, I believe, end of the 19th century. I think it's Chizkiya Medini or de Medina, something like that. And Kosei Bastei Chemed B'Shem Ha'aderet Detalya Ba'ashle Rav Ravi. So the Stei Chemed wrote that this is dependent on great authorities. And a debate. Da Pruta de Rabbi Yosef Humishum Osek B'Mitzvah. He says, look, this idea that the person who's taking care of a lost object is exempt from giving tzedakah is because osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah, right? So he says, look at this. Va'osek b'mitzvah nilmad mehatmeim shenidchu lepesach sheni. He says, your source for osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah is not any of the gemaras that we quoted. I think, he says, your source for Osik B'mitzvah Pater Min HaMitzvah is Pesach Sheni. Meaning, the first time they're going to celebrate the Pesach in the Midbar, there are people who come to Moshe and say, we're Tamei. We can't observe the Korban Pesach. Right? Remember the story, Parshas Baal Oscha? So they come to Moshe and say, we can't do, and we want to do with everybody else. Right? And the answer they get is, well, we're giving you an opportunity, but it's not going to be the same as everybody else. Right? That's the answer. You get, yes, you get the opportunity, but no, you can't do with everybody. You do it a month later, that'll be Pesach Sheni. So he says, there's a machlokas in the Gemara as to who these people were, who were Tamei. Imnos e Arono shel Yosef. Was it the people who were carrying? In other words, why were people Tamei? That's the question. So one view is, because remember, they took out Yosef's bones. So it's the people who are carrying Yosef's bones. Well, if that's true, then Osik B'mitzvah will apply for Gabayit Tzedakah as well. What do you mean? Because there was no specific obligation for any individual Jew to carry Yosef's bones. I mean, somebody had to do it, but no particular person had an obligation to carry Yosef's bones. There's no immediate family member. There's no one to whom Hashem said, this is your mitzvah. So if it's true that someone who's carrying Yosef's bones is exempt from the Korban Pesach, then it is also true that a Gabbai Tzedakah is exempt from other mitzvahs. That's the argument that the Stechemed wants to make. However, v'ikaman de'amar de'mishael ve'al tzafan hayu, there is a view there in the Gemara that it was Mishael and El Tzafan were the people who were Tamei. Remember that Nadav and Avihu die in the beginning of Nisan in the Mishkan when they bring the Ketores that they're not supposed to bring. And Hashem specifically says Mishael and El Tzafan should be the ones to take their bodies out. So Mishael and El Tzafan have an obligation. When God says do, that's not something you can outsource. That goes to you. So Ulidideh, within that view, Yesh Lomar Kamo Shamar HaNesivos, then maybe it could be, like the Nesivos says, that the Gabbai Tzedakah is not going to be exempt. The only one who's exempt is somebody who has a specific obligation to go do this mitzvah. Are we clear? This is an idea we did not encounter last week. The idea that Osik B'mitzvah, Pater Min HaMitzvah only applies if you have a direct chiyuv. So the Sechemet says it depends on how we read that Gemara about Pesach Sheni. Od Kosev Astechemed. And then the Sechemed writes further. Having brought that, he says, Nistabek Harav HaShoel B'shuk Ksav Sofer. He quotes you a tshuva of the Ksav Sofer. The Ksav Sofer was the son of the Chasam Sofer. Lagabe Misha Eshliach Mitzvah B'chol HaMoed Sukkos. Somebody was sent on an errand to go fulfill a mitzvah for somebody. I don't know what the mitzvah was. But it was Chol HaMoed Sukkos. And we say, Depater Misukkah. He's exempt from Sukkah. Im hashaliach notal sachar mi mishalcho, im gam bazeh pater mei mitzvah. What if he's a paid shliach mitzvah? Is he still called somebody who's involved in a mitzvah? Right, similar to the discussion we've had. Demidivrei Rashi Sukkah. He quotes that Rashi about the tefillin merchants, where Rashi said he's trying to make tefillin available to people for people who need it. Right, that's the person who is pater, and he quotes the Magen Avram that we already saw. I'm jumping over the text here because we've already seen this. And the point is that the Sechemed quotes this, right? He quotes this as a as far as it's relevant for our discussion. So we're getting towards the end of that paragraph, in where he says, "The kol shekein, certainly benidon didan." Certainly where his intent is for his own benefit, his intent is for his own salary, and he has no obligation whatsoever to go be somebody's shliach mitzvah, so it would seem he's not exempt from sukkah. So now we come back to the issue of the doctor, who is not obligated to go to medical school, is not obligated to learn medicine. So, v'lechora hu adin barofei shemekabel tmura. The same thing would be true with a doctor who is getting paid. Im me'achola, whether being paid by the patient, o im miguf shlishi, or you know, by the insurance company or by the government or whatever it is. Ve'ein kamuvan shum mitzvas aseh al shum adam liyos rofe o lihis aseh berefua. He says there is no obligation to become a doctor. Ve'ula yesh latarets. But he says not so fast, right? Until now, it sounds like we have a problem, right? At each stage, you have to consider the evidence in front of you. Before we started this last piece, it sounded like the doctor was exempt from davening at the time that they're taking care of the patient, because I was like a mitzvah, pater mina mitzvah. And even though they are paid, their focus is healing. It's not payment. And even if it's 50-50, I still have that mug in Avram that I can work with. But now we're throwing in, yeah, but you have no obligation to become a doctor. Maybe you're like the Gabbai Tzedaka, and therefore you're not exempt, right? That's our trend here. That's our chain. So he says, I could argue still. He says, V'ula yesh latarets, shesha'ani kosvei tefillin. Maybe you could answer that people who write tefillin are a different story. V'hu adin rofei, and the same thing is true for the doctor. Shehem oskin b'mitzvah, they're involved in the mitzvah, v'lachein petur min ha-mitzvos b'chol gavna. And therefore, they are always going to be exempt from other mitzvos that come along. V'lokein gabayt staka o shliach mitzvah b'chol ha-moed shehem asukin b'shlichus. V'lachein im mekablam sachar einem petur min ha-mitzvos. He says, wait a minute. The case of a gabayt tzedaka, what mitzvah is the gabayt tzedaka doing? Yeah, but what mitzvah is he fulfilling? It's true, but what mitzvah is he fulfilling? He's facilitating somebody's mitzvah. It's not his own mitzvah. He's enabling somebody else to do a mitzvah. That's the idea. Similarly, the shliach mitzvah on Sukkot is not somebody who's doing his own mitzvah. He is helping somebody else to do a mitzvah, whatever it is that he's a shaliach for. I don't know what mitzvah it is. We don't have the details. But the point is that may be a different story, because the doctor is doing her own mitzvah. It's not somebody else's mitzvah. This is my mitzvah. I'm healing somebody.
The gabbai is not osek mitzvah. Is he doing
it? Yeah, the gabbai is just the gabbai is facilitating. It's a very important thing to do. Again, the Gemara says, Gadol hama'asa yosim en ha'osa. It's greater to be somebody who helps other people to give. But that's a cosmic greater. If you ask me what mitzvah he's fulfilling, the answer is he's not. We really like what he's doing and we think it's important. But it's not directly a mitzvah. So he says, not so fast. Even if you're going to tell me Gabbai Tzedakah has no obligation to do this and therefore is not exempt, doctor, nurse, healing people, is doing an actual mitzvah at this moment, and therefore it does not matter that they had no duty halachically to become a doctor, to become a nurse. Clear? Brilliant distinction.
So this doesn't refer to just nurses and doctors.
Yeah, correct. This will.
I'm taking care of somebody at home for a week.
Yep.
And I can't leave the bed. Right.
Correct. Correct. And then that's going to take us back to where David asked before. What about somebody who's involved in communal matters? And we're going to see that. We're going to have to discuss that. So yes, it is broader than that. We happen to be dealing with healthcare settings, but it is not limited to healthcare settings. That is true. So the Nishmas Avram says, not so fast. Not so fast. And then he also quotes for us the idea that we already saw from the Bir Halacha, that regarding this business of paid people being exempt, someone who is involved in the actual mitzvah, or not being exempt because they're being paid, that doesn't apply to somebody who is involved in the actual mitzvah. This is the Bir Halacha that I thought I put on the sheet that I realized I didn't put on the sheet. Well, let's see it. Let's read it, because it's in here. Kosev Maran HaShulchan Aruch. He quotes Rabbi Yosef Karo. Kosvei Tefillin. You see it? Kosvei Tefillin U'Mezuzos. Those who are scribes, who are writing Tefillin, who are writing mezuzos. V'heim v'tagarehem, their merchants, v'tagarei tagarehem, and the final retailer, v'chola oskim b'melecha shamayim, and anybody involved in the service of heaven. V'turim e'anachas tefillin kolayom, they don't need to put on tefillin all day. Zulas b'shas kriya shema u'tefillin, except for the core biblical mitzvah of saying shema. The biblical mitzvah they won't be exempt from, that's its own discussion. Umosif Moreno Harav the Rama in Ahaga. If they actually have to engage in their trade during the time of Shema and Shmona Esrei, as Peturin Mikriya Shema Utfilo Utfilin, they're exempt from Shema and Davening and Tfilin. Because the Rama's position is that you only have to do one mitzvah at a time. The Kosev a Mishneh Brura B'Shem a Magen Avram. Mishneh Brura writes, quoting the Magen Avram. Yeah, v'tagarehem, af shemarvichin mizeh, even though they are profiting from it. V'davka im ikar kavanasam kedei lahamtziyam limkor l'misha tzarech lahem, specifically where their essential intention is to make tefillin available to sell to somebody who needs it. Avalam ikar kavanasam rak lehistaker lo mikri osik b'mitzvah. But if their main focus is just to make money, that's not called osik b'mitzvah, right? This is not news. This is what we've seen. V'ayin sham b'bir halacha, and he says, see the bir halacha there. Shemavdil bein haosek beguf hamitzvah kigon hashavas avedo ksiva sefer Torah tefillin mezuzah v'chi agavna shu bichlal osek b'mitzvah ubein misha lokeach stam kedei lamtzion limkor lemisha tzarech lahem. He says the bir halacha makes a distinction between somebody who is actually performing a mitzvah, somebody who is returning a lost object, someone who is writing tefillin mezuzos, as opposed to somebody who bought tefillin and mezuzahs and wants to make them available to people who's not engaged in the actual mitzvah. In the latter case, says the Bir Halacha, in the case in which you're not really doing a mitzvah act, you better have kavana for the mitzvah. You don't have kavana for the mitzvah, you're out. But if you're engaged in the mitzvah act, he says, I don't care what your kavana is. It doesn't matter. You're engaged in the mitzvah action. That's an interesting distinction that we had not seen yet. So the Nishmas Avram brings both of those points. Point number one, you're actually doing your own mitzvah here as a medical professional. And number two, you're engaged in an actual mitzvah. And therefore, even if you didn't have an obligation to become a medical professional, you are still going to be exempt. The concerns of the nesivos of, well, maybe you didn't have an obligation to become one, that's not talking about this case. That's talking about where you're not doing a mitzvah yourself. That's where you're just enabling mitzvos. So let's now, let's just digest this to the application. Is that okay? Okay. Lafi kol ha'amur. So based on everything we've said, rofei she'tarud b'tipul cholim, a doctor who is caught up in taking care of patients. Ava pisha in adam miyisrael mitzuva liyos rofei. Even though no one has an obligation to become a doctor, ach kishu kvar rofei mutol alav mitzvah letapel b'cholim. But once he becomes a doctor, then he has a mitzvah of taking care of the sick. Ve'ava pisha mekabel sachar, even though he's getting paid, bein me'acholav bein miguf shlishi, whether he's getting paid by the patient or whether he's getting paid by some third party, pater min ha-mitzvah, he's exempt from the mitzvah, because he is engaged in the mitzvah itself when he's taking care of the sick. And because his essential intent is, I want to heal the patient. Or Eba Bir Halacha, and he quotes the Bir Halacha, this is an interesting note. He says, even when you are resting during your workday, so that you'll be able to then go back and take care of patients, nikra osek b'mitzvah. You are called osek b'mitzvah, even when you're on a break. In other words, I might have said, okay, so you're exempt when you're actually seeing patients. But if you get a break time, now you have a duty to put on tefillin or whatever it is. He says, no. It could, I mean, if it doesn't disrupt your break, if this still feels like a break, it clears your head and so on, matuv manoim, that's great. But if you need the break to drink coffee and breathe and stare out the window, then that's what you do. You're still in the category of somebody who is involved in performing a mitzvah. That's what he says. We're going to see more about that in a minute, but Michael, you've been very patient.
I just want to know, there was a distinction between the stolen virgin and the gavai tzedakah.
Yeah, correct.
What is it?
So the distinction between the tefillin merchant and the gabbai tzedakah is that the tefillin merchant is, I'm making an assumption. The tefillin merchant is being paid, and the gabbai tzedakah is not necessarily. If the gabbai tzedakah is being paid, I don't see a distinction.
Neither one is osek in his own mitzvah.
Correct. Neither one is obligated to become this. And number two, neither one is doing a mitzvah of his own. That is correct. So I would put them in the same category. I wouldn't distinguish. Yeah. Are there questions online? I haven't asked anything. I haven't asked anybody there yet. Nope. Okay. So that's the basic point here, is the doctor is exempt. And just to finish off that last bit here, he brings you two other points. Once we mention what about during the break, he points out two other things. Begeder shel ha'osek b'mitzvah pater min ha'mitzvah. Regarding this business of you're involved in the mitzvah, you're exempt from other mitzvahs. Shamati mimori rabbi agon Rav Yeshua Neuvert shlita. I heard from Rav Neuvert. Rav Neuvert was the author of Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa. Sharofei pater mitfila. That a doctor is exempt from davening. Lo rak bismanchu bodek umitapel bachole. Not only when he is examining and treating the patient, afilu she'ein bo sakana, even without any danger, it's not a life and death case. Elagam bismanchu asuk beksiva betik hachole, but also when he's writing up the patient's file, he's exempt as well. Vafilu bismanchu kosev michtave shichrur, even when he's writing letters of discharge from the hospital. He calls zeh mugdar ka'osek b'mitzvah, because all of that is involvement in the mitzvah. You can make the argument that the discharge letter is actually preserving the patient's health. Right? Get them out of the hospital before they catch something. So this is also part of patient care. Ad kan devarav, that's Rav Neuvert's comment. But then he does have one limit. One second. He says, me'idach, on the other hand, shamati mibori rabbi shlita shahashmas hartza'a oshir l'studentim eino mugdar ka'osek b'mitzvah. He says, lecturing to students, that wouldn't qualify as osek b'mitzvah. Teaching the medical students would not fit within this category. Okay. Question? No? Okay. So that's all in terms of the obligation to daven. But now the question, which we pointed to before. So what happens once you're done? Two cases to ask about. Case number one, you were in shul, you were davening Shmona Esrei, something happened and you needed to take care of it. What do you do now? Do you go back to where you were in Shmona Esrei? Do you have to start from the beginning again? Yeah. What are the rules? It don't just say, come on, I'll just go back to the beginning. Because if you go back to the beginning inappropriately, that's bracha levatala, right? It's not you can just say, well, don't worry about it, God. I can hack it. I'll go back to the beginning. You have to know whether you're supposed to go back to the beginning or not. That's one question. And then the second question, which was asked before, is do you have an obligation to make up the davening if you missed it, right? We say that somebody who missed mincha, not due to carelessness, but they were busy with something and they forgot, or they were engaged in something that actually exempted them from it, so they now need to daven two Marav Shmona Esreis. What about where they were taking care of a patient? Do they have an obligation to daven Marav twice? We'll see. You can make the argument that no, they do not. So that's what we'll need to discuss as well. We're not getting to that tonight. Tonight we'll at least start on the issue of the person who stopped middle of Shmona Esrei. Okay? Clear? Everyone online clear? Guess so? Okay. So, the question that you have to ask is this called a full interruption of your Shmona Esrei? Because there's room to distinguish between different types of interruptions to your davening. I'll explain it outside and then we'll see the sources inside. One type of an interruption is where you are personally ineligible to daven. Example, someone who feels like they have to use the washroom. That person is not allowed to daven Shmona Esrei at that point. So they're ineligible. And yes, it depends on the degree to which they feel it, whether they'd be able to wait, and so on. There are complications in that halacha. But that's all one type of halt in davening. The other type of halt in davening is where there's an external circumstance that keeps you from davening. You're perfectly ready to daven, but there's an external circumstance that says, no, you can't daven. And you'll see when we get into it in the Gemara, you'll see an example of that. So those are two different types of haltings of your davening, and we'll see reason to argue that only in one of them do we say you have to go back to the beginning. And in the other, once the circumstance passes, you're able to go back to where you were. Clear? Okay. So take a look on your sheet, please. It's source Zion. Gemara in Brachos. Tanu Rabbanan, Brisa says, Haya omid betfila umayim shosasin al birkav. It's a little gross, but you're medical professionals. Deal with it. The person is davening Shmona Esrei, and urine emerges. Posik ad sheyichlu hamayim v'chozer umispalel. So he stops until the urination is done, and then goes back to davening. End of quote from the Brisa. So the Gemara asks, when you say he goes back to davening, lehechon chozer, where does he go back to? Machlokes, Rav Chisda v'Rav Hamnuna. Machlokes, Rav Chisda and Rav Hamnuna. Chad amar chozer l'rosh. One said, go back to the beginning of Shmona Esrei. V'chad amar l'makom shepasak. And the other one says, no, you pick up where you left off. Lema b'hakimiflagi. Let's say, can you say that they're actually debating about a separate issue? Separate discussion. Mar Savar im shaha kde ligmor es kula chozer l'rosh, umar savar l'makom shepasak. Can we say that what they're talking about is specifically where your interruption of Shmona Esrei was long enough that you could have said Shmona Esrei during that break? We distinguish in terms of the length of the interruption and say that this is talking about where, let's say, I'm going to make up a number. Let's say an average Shmona Esrei is 4 minutes. Okay, I invented that. So would we say then that their debate is only where you waited 4 minutes? That's where they're saying, and that's where they're having their debate. And one of them is saying, since you had a full Shmona Esrei wait, therefore you have to go back to the beginning. And the other one is saying, no, even if you waited that long, you can pick up where you were. The implication of that construction is that if you waited less than 4 minutes, everybody would agree you could pick up where you left off. It's only because you waited this long that somebody says, no, you have to go back to the beginning. So the Gemara says, Rav Ashi says, no, that can't be, because then you're missing words in this Brisa. Then the Brisa should have said, well, if you waited less than 4 minutes, then keep going where you were. In the event that you waited more, then it's a machlokes, right? That's what you should have said. Amar Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi says, fourth line in Sor Zayin, Hai im shaha im lo shaha mi bayile. Then it should make a distinction and say, if you waited, then X. If you did not wait, then Y. Ella de kule alma im shaha kde ligmor es kula chozer l'rosh. So he says, it's not true. He says, everybody agrees. If you waited 4 minutes, then you definitely go back to the beginning. No question. Vahasam, and the debate over there was, bidalo shaha kamiflagi. That's where you did not wait 4 minutes. Demar savar gavra dechuyahu, ve'ein roi, ve'ein tfila so tfila. One view is, this guy with the bathroom issue, this person was not eligible to daven. His davening, had he continued davening, would not have been a davening, and therefore he has to go back to the beginning. Umar Savar Gavra Chazyahu Utfilaso Tfilin. The other one says no. He's ready to daven. We just don't want him davening, and therefore his davening would count, and therefore he does not need to go back. So the conclusion of the Gemara here is, it seems to be that in the event that he waited the full 4 minutes, he does have to go back to the beginning. It's only machlokes if he waited less than 4 minutes. So Tosfos has a problem, and this is the last source we'll get to see. Tosfos has a problem. From a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, it's really a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. What's the minimum number of shofar blasts you have to hear on Rosh Hashanah?
40?
Lower.
10.
10, which are 9, because it really is tekiah, trua, tekiah 3 times, which is 9. But because we have this weird thing with the trua, and maybe the trua is trua, maybe it's shvarim, and maybe it's shvarim trua, So you end up calling it 10, because Shvarim Trua you can sort of count as 2. So it's 3, 3, and 4 for a total of 10. But yes, the answer is that's your minimum, right? And then we end up with more. Malchus, Zichron, Shofar, and fine. So there is a source in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Yochanan says, it's in the beginning of Tosfos in source Ches, Shama Teisha Tekios B'Teisha Shaos Bayom Yatza. It's Rosh Hashanah. You're sitting in the house. Somebody blows a tekia. An hour later, somebody blows a shvarim. An hour later, somebody blows a tekia. You are Yotze. That's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. So Tosfos says, Alma, we're towards the end of the first line in source Ches, Alma tekios mitzdarfos. That means that the shofar blasts combine with each other. Avlagav deshak de lasos kulam. Even though you had a gap in between long enough that you could have done all of them. Why, regarding Shmona Esrei, are you telling me if I waited 4 minutes, I have to go back to the beginning, but I could wait an hour with the shofar blasts and then keep right on going? Why is there a distinction? Va'omer hasar mikutzi. So he quotes the sar mikutzi. This is one of the Balei HaTosfos. I think it's Rav Shimshon of Kutzi. D'yesh l'chalek, the distinction you could make is, d'sha'ani hacha de'ein ro'oi likros. It's a different story in the Shema case, the Shmona Esrei case. Because thanks to his bathroom issue, he is ineligible to daven. He's ineligible to say Shema. V'chein l'kaman, and similarly, the Gemara later will have a case, Rabbi Avo, azal b'mavoas hametunafos. Rabbi Avo is walking through a dirty area where there's sewage. Da'asam kuli amamodu d'chozir l'rosh. Then everybody agrees. You have to go back to the beginning. Aval hecha d'gavra chazi. But where he's eligible, kamo Megillah. He's hearing, here's the first two prakim of the Megillah. And then for some reason there's an interruption. And then he picks up later. Or shofar in the nine blasts case. Kuli amamodu d'eino chozir l'rosh ela l'makom shepasak. Everybody agrees that you do not go back to the beginning. You go back to the place where you halted. So, we now have a distinction. Not all gaps are created equal. A gap in which you were ineligible, right? The guy with the urine, so then he has to go back to the beginning. A gap in which you were eligible, but there was some other reason that you stopped, maybe you don't need to go back to the beginning. Maybe you could actually resume where you were, and then therefore you should. So the argument you could make here is the doctor was physically eligible to daven, they just were needed to take care of somebody who collapsed. So maybe it's not a full hafzik. Yeah?
That's not what the Gemara said. The Machloka one said he was eligible, one said he was not eligible.
Right, so the language of it.
About what happens if he's not eligible.
Right. So the, unless that's the answer. In other words, the way to read that line is, they're talking there about where he did not wait 4 minutes, right? And one of them says a man in this situation is considered ineligible, and therefore his davening is not davening. And the other one disagreed because he said, no, he is considered eligible. He's considered an eligible davener. That's his reason for distinguishing. We paskin, he's ineligible. So the question here is going to be, could we say that the doctor does not necessarily go back to the beginning because the doctor was eligible to daven. They were just engaged in a mitzvah. That's the argument that we're going to see. So what we'll have to do when we start next time is go to the Nishmas Avram, where he's going to ask this question about what the doctor does. It's going to get more complicated before it is simple, because there's another distinction we have to make. What did you do when you were taking care of the patient? Did you talk? Did you write stuff down? Did you just silently take care of the patient, operate the defibrillator? Like, what did you do? So that's going to be part of this conversation as well, God willing, next time. Okay? Next week, yes. We are on.